This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Aftershock Central Podcast. Hello, friend.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
They're our friends, too.
Oh, I guess they are. That's true. Hello, friends. Welcome, one and all, to this Aftershock Podcast.
The only.
Still the only. Shame on you guys. Everyone should be doing Aftershock Podcast. Anyways, we are gathered here tonight to discuss all kinds of stuff. Books, really. There's not much news, is there? Did I miss any news? Rodney, you're the news guy.
No, there was no news this time.
No news. Okay, good. Just making sure.
That's no news is good news, though.
Well, I mean, sometimes.
Well, I mean, if you're Aftershock and you have new news at least once a week or every other week, it's kind of weird that there is no news. Because there for a while, they were pumping out news like left and right.
Yep. Well, I mean, they just announced a few books, right? So it's okay if we don't have anything for a little while.
Right.
Well, the thing this weekend is ECCC. So I'm sure they're all busy doing that. Is there any con between now and C2E2? Like big cons?
There might be like a Wizard World one, but
listen, Ryan,
actually, I think WonderCon is next month or this month.
Really?
Yes, but I don't think that Aftershock. I didn't see them like on the vendor, so they might be sitting that one out.
Well, they're not listed on the C2E2 vendors either, but we have Twitter confirmation and text confirmation that they'll have a booth there.
Nice.
All right. Right on.
Okay, yeah, WonderCon is the 23rd through the 25th.
So the end of this month.
End of this month, yeah. So what's that, like 2 weeks before C2?
Yep.
God, it's so close.
Yeah, it is.
I can smell the farts already. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I started looking at panels. There's no Aftershock panel this year, which is too bad.
Yeah.
Last year's panel was fun, even though it was very small.
Yeah. Joe wore himself out salsa dancing with us in the aisle.
Yeah. I think a con like that, though, it's probably better to be on the floor, right? Than to
like,
promote yourself with a panel.
Yeah, definitely.
So, plus, I think Marvel and DC are both going to be at C2E2. I think Marvel's got like five panels. So, you know, everyone's just going to go to those.
Yeah.
Except me.
Well, not. Yeah, I was going to say, well, not everybody, but.
Yeah, not me. All right, so let's talk about some books. We've got some good stuff this week. We've got the return of the Rough Riders with Ride or Die number one. We've got
Book of the Week.
Oh, damn. Spoiler alert.
Dude, we've been saying Book of the Week for a bit, so.
Yeah, I know. I tweeted out Book of the Week on Monday.
Yeah.
Like before this week's books came out.
Yeah. And I've read like 20 or 30 from this week. And I still have like 20 or 30 to go, and it's still Book of the Week.
It was something.
We've got
Backways number 3, and then Fujitsu number 5, which is the last issue. It is the last issue, though, right? They haven't solicited number 6.
Correct.
No, did you see the end? Like, the end is like the whole last page or last panel is like a call to the readers to like. Oh, sorry. All right.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that. You know what? Let's just start off with Fujitsu. How about that?
Word.
Travis, have you done your diligent duty? And do you have a nutshell recap for us?
Wait, we need to create a roll call.
Oh, good point. Create a roll call! So we've got John Nitz writing, Wesley St. Clair on art, Ryan Hill on letters, and that's it.
Okay, so full disclosure, I did do a lot of nutshells, pretty much everyone but this, because I ran out of time. And beyond that, it's maybe a little bit daunting to try to nutshell it.
All right, I'll nutshell it. That's fine. So
I could try to do it.
Okay,
I don't know.
Go for
like,
it. Oh, you're gonna freeball it. Continue.
Okay. Yeah. You know, that's your influence. All right, so you guys can just tell me if I leave anything out. But so starts out, Rachel is telling Fu that she had a kid by him, and he went off into space. And then he has a showdown with Wadlow. Basically Wadlow like activates a backdoor into Rachel, like hacks her to attack Fu, turns her into like a gateway to another reality. And Fu, I guess, having already destroyed the atomic katana, he takes the piece that was in his chest and he kills Rachel with it, thus destroying the portal with Wadlow inside.
And then aliens.
And then, yeah, like aliens know instantly that he's dead and plan their invasion.
I think that's a pretty good recap. I don't think we've recapped any issue of this series, by the way, so don't feel bad that you didn't write a recap.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's kind of part of the charm, right?
Absolutely. So my recap would be Jay and Rachel have a baby. Huh? Wadlow's the good guy. Huh? Them's aliens. Huh? And Martin was right about the quantum physics. The end. How about that? That's a good recap.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, let's dive in. That's pretty good. But just like, lest we lose the spirit of it. Like, so the whole quantum theory, right? Does that mean like it seems like they're suggesting that it's all happening simultaneously?
Yes.
In like whatever, like metaphysical terms, like all the realities coexist simultaneously. But I feel like it's confusing because they also, like, Wadlow and maybe Fu make reference to almost that it's like more of a like a cyclical recurring thing, like it's infinitely repeating. So I don't know if that's like just a semantical distinction to like that I'm confused by.
No, I think that's fair. I think it's a little bit of both. He does talk about the cyclical thing, but there's so much happening at one time here that it's maybe a little difficult to discern like what the actual timeline is. But I mean, I think in this issue, Fu pretty much flat out says that it's because of his manipulation of the quantum Fu or whatever, he can do all these things, right? So it doesn't matter if he lives or dies, because like they're constantly fighting the same battle in different timelines with different bodies. And in some of the timelines, Fu is good and Wadlow is bad. And in some, Wadlow's the villain and Fu's the hero. But ultimately, like, the thing that is constant throughout seems to be Rachel, where like Wadlow thinks that he's going to win the battle because he can hurt Fu. But Fu manages to quote unquote win, because I mean, he's laying down dying at the end of the issue next to Rachel. But, you know, he tells us how, like, he's not just out after himself. Like, the only thing that he really cares about in the world is Rachel, and not himself, like Wadlow said. So I think that still goes back to what we talked about with the last issue, the quantum physics thing. Is, I don't know, Ronnie, give me some thoughts while I gather my mind together.
Well, I just see Rachel as the anchor of, like, all the worlds that are happening simultaneously. She's the anchor, the constant part of it.
Yeah, all right, there you go. So do you think that's why Wadlow is able to activate this portal into another dimension through Rachel, right?
Yeah,
like,
yes.
To me, that seemed like the key, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she is the anchor, like, metaphysically. And so, as a result, like, putting that idea into a comic book turns her into the gateway to the other dimensions.
Right.
Right? Because she exists in all of them in right. the same way.
It's like a different take on tearing the fabric of time and space. Instead of something like that we see all the time, what's the most constant thing in all 52 worlds or however many worlds that there are is Rachel. And so let's make her the portal, because on all the Earth, she's still Rachel, but while everybody else changes around her.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So we were talking about Rachel, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm interested in Rachel. You know, because you know, like from a just a premise perspective, you know, in this reality, she's created by Fu. Does that mean that in other realities, maybe she's created by somebody else, or is she always created by Fu, no matter if what kind of crazy shit like Fu is doing in that reality?
Yeah, no, I think she's always created by Fu. There was a line about that as well.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's at, like, right after she, after Fu stabs her with the katana, she says something to the effect of, like, you know, you created me, I created you, like, we created this world, something like that. So my assumption is that regardless of where they are, Fu is still the one that creates her. And maybe the difference here is that they have a son together in this particular timeline or version of the timeline.
Yeah. Okay, so, like, just looking at, like, this version, this reality, I was interested because, like, there's kind of an exchange in there where I think it's, like, Fu is basically like, I made the chassis, and, like, she made herself, she made us, you know, like, she made me, like, a, you know, a romantic partner, you know, like, that wasn't me that did anything, right? And I was just interested, like, to, like, jumping off that, like, I think it speaks to, like, why did Fu actually create her? You know, like, if, you know, like, safe to assume that, like, he, like, it wasn't just, like, a sex bot or something, you know, like, he created the thing and didn't necessarily intend for him to ever develop feelings for it, didn't intend for it to maybe even be truly, like, conscious, sentient, but like that's just an accident that was predicated on her own abilities.
Yeah, and see, and I wonder if the fact that we have this second Fu, if that's not what changed the timeline at some point, right? I think that would go along with this, like, quantum physics stuff that keeps popping up, where, you know, before that battle happened, there wasn't a second timeline, it was just this one. But then after that happened, because of the way that Fu's abilities work, which, like, we don't really know how they work, but somehow they're tied into, like, the Schrodinger's cat thing, right? Like,
yeah,
the cat is both alive and dead until you actually see it. It almost seems to me like that same thing with the second Fu. Like, had Fu not been killed by Wadlow in that particular timeline, they don't have any of this other stuff going. But, I mean, like, there's that one really cool page where it's got the lotus flower in the middle, and you've got a bunch of Fus, like, circling around it,
mm-hmm.
To show, like, the different Fus, right? Because, like, one's got, an oriental hat, one's got, like, a helmet, there's one bandana, there's one with a little hat with a feather on it.
One has a butler suit.
Yep. And they all have the katana through shoulder, right? So, like, right, they're all about to die. But like Wadlow said, you know, he doesn't die because he hasn't pulled the katana out. Once he pulls the katana out, he's gonna die. And that's why he's able to travel to this different timeline.
But he still has the katana in his chest when he shows up. Are you talking about, like, an issue two or whatever?
No, I'm talking about in this one.
Okay, in this one, okay.
Yeah.
Because I was confused by Time Fu, remember? Like, that whole thing?
Yeah, that's who shows up here.
So this is Time Fu, and he's from this reality or a different reality?
He's from a different reality.
Okay.
Because Time Fu is the one that fights Rachel in this issue.
Okay.
It's not regular Fu. It's Time Fu.
So where did regular Fu?
He's still there.
Oh, there's two of them there?
Yeah, there's two of them there. They can both coexist at the same time, I guess.
We saw that in the previous issue.
Yeah. Yeah, so when Fu gets knocked out is when Time Fu shows up. So most of the issue is Time Fu, not regular Fu.
Not Fu,
Time Fu.
So, Fu, yeah. Fu is a great name.
Fu Fu is a great name. Here we go. He said, so long, Fujitsu, see you in the funny papers. That's the line that keeps coming up. And then when Time Fu is about to die sitting next to Rachel, he says something to the effect as well. I think it's in a caption, not a dialogue box. Which, I mean, that ties into the story well in other aspects, because the reason that Wadlow is able to take over Earth is that he's got P.T. Barnum's fortune-telling book, right? So he knows the whole story. And Time Fu tells him, like, that was my plan all along. He's like, on the last page, I pretty much wrote, like, F you, Fu wins.
Got it.
Although we don't see that here, right? Because here, he's dying.
Right.
So does Time Fu zap into like every reality, and or is this like the only reality where he's done that?
Well, we don't know.
It's the only one that we see.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, how often if he gets, like, the quantum kung fu in every reality, or whether this is unique and, like, there's some larger significance to him, like, pulling the katana blade out. Can't remember.
Well, I think that's what with all the foos around the locus is there's different endings or multiple endings and multiple stories that could be wrote for this, whether it's good or bad, or bad foo, time foo, foo-foo, or whatever.
That's what they should name the sequel. Name it foo-foo.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I think that's the whole thing, and however many infinity mirror worlds that there are, the outcomes seems to be always the same, at least.
Yeah, and to me, like, this book has just become so meta, too, right? Because I think a lot of it has to do with, like, translating real world concepts into a story that makes sense for a comic.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you have the constant literary references throughout each of the issues. And, you know, and I said from the first issue that's what I really dug about the book is it, like, the book is crazy as hell, right?
Yeah.
And some of it doesn't make sense. A lot of it doesn't make sense on the surface. But, like, if you start diving in and you go beyond just, like, these are characters doing things and transpose, like, these are concepts enacting on a type of story. And, like, how does the writer change those concepts to fit the story as he sees fit? Then I think if you look at it that way, the book becomes a lot deeper. And I think there's very few books, in comics at least, that are able to do that in a way as successfully as I think this book did it.
Right. It's like an onion. It has so many layers upon layers upon layers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if it was intentional or not, but I got to bring it up because it stuck out to me. But about midway through the book, I would say, where Fu's saying, "I'm sorry, so sorry, Rachel. Every time the going got tough, I got lost and I ran into problems, including us."
Yep.
Well, lost is capitalized in bold.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've watched Lost, the TV show, I mean, that's kind of like the whole thing too. Like, sure. Everything's happening. I don't know if it was like meant that way or if he was just stressing that word or being lost in the multiple mirror universes or what, but I thought that was kind of I picked it out as like a cool Easter egg to revert back to the show, which wasn't on a deeper level like this is per se, but it kind of did the same like time type stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we can ask him now that the series is over, we're going to have Jayon and we can talk about it a little bit. But I think it's really interesting. Yeah. I think that's a good point. I don't know if it's necessarily a Lost reference.
Right.
But it does fit. The analogy still fits. Yeah.
I like still it. Right.
I like it. You're still right, even if you're wrong.
That's correct.
But we won't know because you can be right and wrong at the same time in this book.
That's right.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would just like to add that, like, I am super enticed by this Art Jitsu character that they've teased, you know, like the son who's like already at age one or whatever, 3-4 by now, like a space traveler.
Yeah.
Like, and so, like, let's say hypothetically, I personally hope that they do another arc at least, you know, like I hope the book comes back. I would like to see that character if it comes back and, you know, see how he fits into like this alien invasion that they've set up here. So it's like a pretty large cliffhanger, right?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. So do you guys think that Art Fu is responsible for the invasion? Or is he going to be the one to save Fu from the invasion?
He'll save, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because we already had the switcheroo part, I think. I don't know. I'm going to say save, though, if we get that chance to see it.
I don't know one way or the other. That's why I threw it out.
Okay, narratively speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might depend on whether you think that Fu is the hero or the villain, as you alluded to earlier. You know, like, does that impact whether his son is good or bad?
Sure.
I mean, that, or make it.
Yeah, it could go either way. And I mean, I think that becomes a little tropey to have the good dad battle the bad son that he's.
Right.
Yeah. Or vice versa.
Or vice versa. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk about this last panel then that you already alluded to, Travis. Because I've never I've never seen this done inside the comic before, right? Usually at the end of a series or a stopping point in a series, have like a letter from the writer at the end of the book. But this is like a panel right into the issue.
Yep.
And I thought that was really well done. And it surprised me, but it kind of fit with the way that the story has been throughout, where it constantly takes you like in and out of the story, right? Because the reader knows it's a story, but the characters don't.
Right.
And pretty much what Jane West said was, you know, if you like the book, write the Aftershock, you know, go to your shop, tell them that you really like the book, you want to see more of it, and then maybe you'll see, like, what the deal is with the aliens, and, like, you know, what with the son, like, is Fujitsu dead, or is he not dead? Like, we don't know, and unless you ask for more, then you might not see it again.
Right, and then Jaw and West also say, see you in the funny papers.
Yeah, there you go. That's, yeah, there you go.
Well, dude, like, I kind of like it's like a involved topic, but I do wonder about the economics of like putting out these series, like when they get to the end and they kind of solicit your help to continue. Like, I don't know much about like the economics of comics, but like I was under the impression that creator owned, basically, like, creator is not getting paid by anybody. They just like deliver the product and have it published, and then like get paid on certain, you know, like I don't know, royalties or on certain formats. Is that like your understanding? Or
so I don't want to speak out of turn, and maybe we should have Joe on at some point and ask him what the model is. But from my understanding, that's not quite how the model works for Aftershock.
Okay,
I think with their books, Aftershock does foot a part of the bill. What you're thinking of is like what Image does.
Yeah, exactly.
Because Image doesn't do anything. Like, the creator has to get their own artist, their own editor if they want one. Like, they have to pay everybody. And pretty much all Image does is like serve as a method of distribution, I guess, to get into Diamond at the comic shops.
And then all they do is put their little penis on the cover.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. Whereas, from my understanding, Aftershock does not do it that way. Obviously, okay. the creators retain full rights, but I think Aftershock is more involved with the whole process, like hooking up the creative team, sort it out.
Word. I mean, because my only thought was just that, like, if the major cost per se is like publishing costs, you know, and distribution or whatever, like it might make sense on certain things with the smaller, like, monthly sales to do like a digital exclusive or whatever, and then like after that's gone through its arc, collect it in a trade and sell that, like, anyway, that's just curious.
Sure Yeah, we can ask Joe and get some a solid answer on that, but I'm pretty sure that's the way it works.
All right,
let's talk about, oh wait, we need to rate it up.
We gotta taco it up.
So, Travis, I'll let you go first on this one. Ratings.
All right. Are we doing tamos or tacos?
I don't care what you do. You can do types of beans if you want. It doesn't matter to me.
Can we do taco tamos?
Yes. Sure. All right. So, I'll go 4 out of 5. My fists are particles, my feet are waves, taco tamos.
Nice. Ronnie?
I'm going 4 out of 5 in the funny papers, Tamos.
Damn it, you stole mine.
I know.
Bastard. I'm going to go with 4 out of 5. Let me just eat my chalupas in peace. Taco Tamos.
Okay, so we just Taco Tamo'd this issue, right?
Yes.
So what would you guys give it for the series?
I'd probably stick with the same, dude. I love this as the first issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same as well. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
I might even like go higher. I might go like 4.5 for the series. Yeah.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah. I think the series overall was stronger. I think the ending took me aback quite a bit.
Right.
So I was like, wait, no, don't end it like that. But now that I've had some time to think about it, I'm okay with it. Actually, I'm really
yeah.
So if you enjoyed Fujitsu, then be sure to write Aftershock letters. You put them in the mail. Just don't send them to Hoboken. Friend Aaron Bell might steal your mail, but otherwise you'll be okay. So yeah, and let your comic shop know. I'm sure they're gonna do a trade for this as well. So yeah. It probably wouldn't hurt to order the trade if you haven't picked up the issues. I know that generally helps quite a bit with sales. All right. That's a Family Guy came back, dude.
Yeah. That's exactly how it came back.
People just bought the DVDs. They're like, all right, I guess we'll do it.
Yeah. There was no online petitions.
No, there was no online petitions back then.
No, dude. Now we've reached the age where the online petition is to cancel shit.
That's right. I saw that too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's like, oh God, please, like, Simpsons, come on, guys. Like, it's time.
Well, Ronnie.
It's way past time.
Ronnie has pioneered the petition to petition. Yeah. So that's what's coming up next. Ronnie's just ahead of his time.
Yep, because I'm so fond of petitioning things.
Yes, exactly. But petition for your shop to carry the book.
That's right.
All
right.
Let's go on to Backways number 3. And let me make sure I have this pulled up. All right, Backways number 3, we've got Justin Jordan on writing duties. We have Eleonora Carlini on art, Sylvia Today on colors, and Marshall Dillon letters. That Marshall Dillon, he's busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was a famous cowboy back in the day, too.
Was he?
It was Marshall Dillon, and it was on an old, like, Bonanza-type show. The Marshall's name was Dylan or something.
Oh, man. Anyways. How old are you?
I'm old.
All right, Travis, you want to nutshell us up?
Word. All right. So Anna and Coyote Bones are on the run with the Morning Wolf on their trail. Coyote Bones seeks to distract Anna and her newfound knack by taking her to the Graveyard of the Desolate, where she begins to tell about the Outsider and the Desolation. The Morning Wolf catches up to them and seems about to execute Anna when the other Quorum agent arrives, puts the wolf down temporarily, only to reveal he's not there to save Anna.
So, Ronnie, I'll let you kick off the discussion on this.
With this issue really flipped things on its head for me. Not in a good or bad way, just like the way I perceived the world, I guess, because a lot of stuff that we were seeing at face value, it wasn't how it was. Like, I think, like Travis and I talked about in the previous episode, Coyote Bones, there was still something up her sleeve, whether she was in it for herself or whatever, and we can see that she's clearly in it for something else.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what the wolf says, right?
Right, yeah.
Because when they try to stop the wolf, he pretty much flat out tells her, like, hey, don't trust Bones, because screw you.
Right.
Well, dude, I would assume maybe it's motivated by that, like, she has no knack of her own, and, like, all her, like, fancy doodads, like, crap out on her. So to have access to what seems to be somebody who can acquire every knack, not just be limited. Like, she thinks she's going to ride that to whatever she wants. And I think she kind of made reference to that. Is like, no, we can use her, you know?
Yeah. So I'm curious, like, do we know what exactly Bones is after?
No, I don't think so.
Do we have any crazy theories?
I don't have a crazy theory on that. I have a different crazy theory, though.
Oh, hello.
Well, it's when Crazy Bones and the Morning Wolf and Anna's talking. And he says that they're looking for Sylvia, and she's not in the Backways. She's nowhere. Mm-hmm. And we already saw her, like, a couple of panels before in the mirror.
Yep.
So that means that the nowhere is actually a place.
Yep.
Instead, like the Backways, instead of nowhere.
I thought the same thing. So, Ronnie, you get one of these. So, yeah, no, I agree. That's what I like about this book. There's something still missing for me from Backways. I don't think I'm as invested in the characters as I generally like to. Because it almost seems like Anna and Bones are like constantly getting to some kind of antics, and we're not getting enough development from each of them. Because like we're three issues in now, right? And I'm assuming a 5 or 6 issue mini,
right?
So we're halfway there, and you know, sure they can tell a whole lot of story in the next 3 issues. But like, I prefer, and you know, I think you guys are the same. I prefer stories that are more character driven. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be more of like the mystery driving things, right? Like why Anna is here, like what Bones wants, like what the hell's going on in this.
Why Anna's not freaking out when she's supposedly first seen things for the first time.
Sure. And we're not really getting that. But I love the world, right? And from the first issue, my initial thought, if you guys remember, Justin Jordan used to write Shadow Man over at Malliant. And a lot of this world reminds me of like the things they try to do with the Dead Side later on in the series. And then like with the Dr. Mirage stuff, they brought a lot of the stuff up again. And a lot of this seems like a recreation of that like weird, dark, mystical place. But much more fleshed out, right? Because we see like there's like thriving communities and cities and people and like have like a very solid magic system. You have different castes of like magical beings that have different abilities. And I really enjoy all that. But there's something that still prevents me from caring about these. And I think we're supposed to, you know, like sympathize with Anna, right, as the main character. But I find Bones a lot more interesting.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, dude, like...
Go ahead, Travis.
I was just going to jump on and say, like, you know, at least Bones is constantly referencing, like, about Anna, like, why don't you react to any of this, you know? Like Anna's characterized as a robot. And I assume that, ties into perhaps just her innate ability or whatever enables her to, like, whatever, absorb these powers, become the outsider, assumedly. You know, like she's the monster by all like indications so far. I don't know. I guess I'm also curious if she is the bad guy in this, and whatever Bones maybe is like the unlikely hero. Then like, you know, I guess it begs the question why Sylvia was taken and by whom, you know, like maybe by Wendy or, you know, like the Quorum in some fashion, but like why they would, you know, take her and basically set all of this into motion. Seems like unless, a bad
move. Unless they were rescuing her.
Mm. But I don't know that she would have ever gotten any power if she hadn't kind of been shoved into the Backways in the first place.
Maybe. But maybe her memories or things have been suppressed and they didn't want her to influence Sylvia. And so instead of kidnapping her, they basically saved her or rescued her.
Yeah, I like the idea that she is from the Backways, but she doesn't remember for whatever reason. Like, you know, maybe she was taken out of this place when she was a baby, right? And just raised by normal people, whatever.
Or banished.
Or banished, right? Like maybe they put a spell on her, like a forgetting spell or something. I don't know. Never.
See, and I think, and that also leads to the credibility of why Coyote Bones isn't very coming forward to actually look for Sylvia either. Because every time that she wants to, we have to stop here and look at this, or I'll explain this to you later type thing. So she's like procrastinating and dragging her feet.
Yeah, I mean they've also been on the run like somewhat for chunks of it, you know, like on the run from Fel and then on the run from the Wolf. So you know, like on the run from Skin Horse, you know, like they're running most of the time, and then they slow down and she starts telling stories. I'm curious about this, you know, just like since we were talking about Anna and Sylvia, like Wendy has made reference a few times to both Bone Stealer and Soul Eater.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if you think that that's the same person, or is it possible that like there's like Anna and Sylvia are them by turn?
I would say
I was a stump the peanut gallery.
Yeah.
Either way.
I don't know. That's a good question. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it either.
Okay, actually, I got another one for you. Okay, so like, how about this? The guy with like whatever that business is on his head, like. I think they look like holes or, you know, like it looks like the top of my shoe. like, so, you know, I'm curious what he's doing because like they both seem to be working for the Quorums. So you would think they're on the same side, but he wants to handle it. I'm curious, like how he fits into it versus like other agents of the Quorum, you know, and like what is his end game?
I don't really know if he actually has an end game, if he's just the cleanup crew. Or the problem solver, or whatever you want to say it. Like, when things get deep, he comes in, takes care of the situation, and goes out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Wolf could have done it. Maybe he only gets commission if, like, he's the one who kills the person.
Yeah, right.
I mean, but I'm sure they'll like, get into that.
If he's, like, a bounty hunter, then I think that makes sense.
Mm. Well, he's kind of, like... reluctant, right? Like, he didn't want to do this in the first place.
Well, I mean, look at him. He's got to be old, so maybe he was retired. Or if they referenced it before, like, this doesn't happen, like, all the time, so maybe he's out of practice or was semi-retired.
Yeah.
I just want to know, are those, like, deadbeats that Anna has on? Are they souls? What kind of headphones is she wearing?
Oh, no, it's Skull Candy, right?
Dad jokes.
Oh, yeah, it probably is Skull Candy. Yeah, because I see the skull on the side of it now.
I like Dead Beats better.
Dead Beats. Dead Beats by Dre.
Dead Beats by Dre. There you go. Episode title.
Yeah, dude, don't let him order on credit.
All right. Anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm good.
Yeah.
All right, I guess I'll kick the ratings off on this one. I'm going to go with, let's see. You know, I like the family pack of tacos at Taco Bell. It's 6 soft shells and 6 hard shells in a box. It's great if you have a family. So I'm going to give this 6 soft shells and 1 hard shell taco tamo. I don't have an actual tamo. That was it.
So you're going to give it a 6 out of 5?
No, it's a 7 out of 12. Pay attention.
Wow.
6 soft tacos, 1 hard taco.
I'll go next, and I'll stick to the normal stuff. And I will go 3.5 Skull Candy Tamos.
And Beats by Dre Taco Tamos.
And I'm going to go 4 out of 5 Head Like a Whole Taco Tamos. What's up with the, like... What's your guys' read? What's on that guy's head?
What's up with that?
Yeah, who knows?
All right.
What's on a lot of these people's heads? They all have something on their head.
True.
Yeah. Like, are they, like, is Coyote Bones, is that dreads? Or...
Don't they have, like, little head? Hands at the end?
I thought they were bones.
Oh, I thought they were, like, little tiny hands. I guess that makes...
She has little tiny hands.
She has little tiny hands
on her. Kind of like our president.
Oh. Ba-dum-psh. All right, let's go on to, spoiler alert, the best book of the week. Not just Aftershock.
We might have already mentioned that.
Not just Aftershock of any publisher. Rough Riders, Ride or Die number 1. This is, of course, written by Adam Glass.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Adam Glass. Art by Patrick O'Leaf. Colors by Gabe Elteb. And letters by Sal Cipriano. Shout outs to him, because that's a Sicilian name. High five. All right. Sicilians got to stick together, bro. All right, Travis, give us a nutshell.
All right, so Houdini crashes Roosevelt's daughter's wedding to recruit him for a mission, and he recounts the story of a seance that unleashed an ancient evil. The other Rough Riders are already in the field. Monk Eastman and Jack Johnson investigate the scene of the seance, A monk discovers a box of letters while the housekeeper approaches behind with a knife. Edison and Annie Oakley examine the bodies of the seance victims and discover ancient scripture on the cadaver's feet while the other victims rise from the slabs to attack. Houdini takes Roosevelt to Providence, where a police officer directs them to the house of H.P. Lovecraft, gatekeeper to another realm.
All right. So I want to get Easter eggs out of the way.
Nice. But
I know, Ronnie, you had one that you posted.
Yeah.
I want to do one.
Okay.
So was it just me, or is there a Black Eyed Kids references book?
Oh, very good, sir.
All right. So it wasn't just me. All right. Great. As Travis mentioned in his nutshell, we do hear about the master, the ancient evil, in one of the seances. Of course, the master is the little evil dude,
the boy king.
From Black Eyed Kids.
The boy king.
Yeah, the boy king.
Good lord, dude. So, yeah, yet another one to add to the Black Eyed Kids verse. That and Baby Teeth, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I smell a crossover.
All right, Ronnie. So you're a fan of the Supernatural show.
Yes.
You're also a fan of the Supernatural, but you're a fan of the Supernatural show. Right. So tell me about this Supernatural reference. Because even though I promised, you know, a year ago when you guys talked to Adam that I would watch Supernatural, I still have not watched Supernatural.
Yeah, well, that's shame on you. So for that, you get a boo. Okay, so they're looking at the gate to go into H.P. Lovecraft's, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there in the top right is the anti-possession seal, which is also on Supernatural, which both boys have tattooed on them, so that way they can't get possessed when they go hunting.
Okay.
The big circle with the little jagged edge thing there is a angel banishment signal. There's also other ones there too, but those are the two big ones that have played out in Supernatural.
All right, so are angels evil in Supernatural?
It depends on which side you are. Some are assholes. Okay. Yeah,
gotcha.
But they do have a best friend that's an angel. So,
of course.
They also have a best friend that's a demon too. So,
is it that Boreanaz guy from Buffy?
No,
because he's the only angel for me.
It's Misha Collins.
Oh, okay.
But right. Yeah, so that whole gate to the fence gate where everything's there, that's basically Supernatural reference. And like right above it, Houdini's saying Supernatural warning symbols. So
I gotcha.
And then some of them aren't just from Supernatural, but
sure. Well, I mean, I'm sure they didn't like create these for Supernatural. I'm sure they're like pre-existing.
Right.
Like esoteric symbols, right?
Right. Yep.
That's cool. I like that Lovecraft is in this.
And I wasn't
done. Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
I wasn't done.
Oh, my bad. Continue.
No, that's the main one. The other one, the possession story that Houdini tells, happened. It was an episode where the boys were around the table and they were trying to debunk a fake seance. And an actual demon or something came through and she started puking and blah, blah, blah. So that's one also, but that's all I have for those two.
Yeah. So I got one actually. And maybe this is super obvious, but you know, on the same page as like all the symbols and stuff, the address at the top of the page is actually Lovecraft's address in Providence.
Oh, really? Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And by the way, I just wonder if, you know, like, you know, they go to the cop in Providence or whatever, and they're like, they're trying to find out his real address because he's got like a fake address. I wonder if they're just like, hey, yo, so like, you seen any of these like weird ass like like symbols anywhere? And he's like, oh, yeah, actually, I know just the place.
So my question to you guys is, how does Edison know how to read the ancient scribble on the foot or on the feet of this one seance victim?
Yes, dude. I had the same question.
Because he's a smart prick.
It just, to me, it doesn't seem like Edison would delve in the supernatural. Like, I understand him, like, knowing about the Bible, for example. But, like, he knows how to read these scribbles and knows that they're ancient, like, pre-biblical writings.
Right.
And that was curious to me. And you know, based on the last series where Edison was kind of the bad guy, but not really, because pretended to be bad to, you know, solve the whole thing, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then we learned that he really is a bad guy. I wonder if we're not going to see in this series Edison kind of becoming an actual bad guy.
I think your answer to how he knows how to read the feet is Annie Oakley.
Oh? Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you now.
Because, I mean, he brought her back to life, but we still don't know how, right?
Yeah.
Ah.
So do we think that Lovecraft is working with Edison?
Well, maybe. I didn't go that far, but you asked the question how he knew this part.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I like it.
I don't think anybody's working with Lovecraft, because from what I remember and how he looks here is like he's paranormal or paranoid and like a shut-in, right?
Yeah, but, you know, Lovecraft, sorry, Lovecraft fans, was kind of a dick. And he was a charlatan, so...
Okay.
He does look very young here, so it seems like this is obviously early on in Lovecraft's career.
Okay.
So maybe it's slightly before he started taking advantage of these made-up things to make money. But, you know, maybe he was always that way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Had to get to that point. But yeah, it's still cool to see Lovecraft on here.
Yeah.
Regardless of how I feel about Lovecraft as a person, I enjoy the stories that evolved out of his ideas. He created a cool magical... I don't know, we'll see. But I like the way that the band has been brought back together for this series.
Yep.
Yeah, so why do you think that Roosevelt was the last one to be recruited? Like, previously he'd kind of been the leader, arguably, right? You know, is it just because, like, Houdini seems to not like him very much and it's kind of like his deal this time?
Well, I don't think it's just Houdini, right? I think at the end of the last series, they all had a falling out. Because they felt like Roosevelt was holding information from him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and he is the president. So
well, yeah, there's not, also that.
So I mean, everybody else, like Houdini, even told him is like he can walk down the street and not really be noticed unless he was on stage. So he could still go incognito. But you know, if you see Roosevelt leaving the White House or whatever, then something's wrong, or he would get noticed or whatever.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be missed while he's away on this mission?
I'm sure he can find a way around it.
Yeah. And then plus, like Houdini said, like he wasn't sure that they would even ask him if they didn't need his connections.
Yep.
Mm.
You got to remember, dude, like this is early 1900s, right? So like who's going to know that he's gone? Like aside from people at the White House, right? There's no social media, right? Like Roosevelt's not tweeting at 6 o'clock in the morning every day. You know what I'm saying?
True.
And well, it is alternate history, so like we don't know that for sure.
Sure. But
it's not alternate history, it's untold history.
It's untold history, exactly. Exactly. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you gotta wonder something.
But we're just asking the questions.
Yeah, we're just asking the questions. We don't know any answers. I don't know. This podcast is over. I don't know what we're doing.
Cease and desist.
Oh man. So are we ready to rate this one up then?
Yeah.
All right.
Before we rate it up, I wanted to add that I'm kind of curious what is going to be in like all the letters and paperwork that fell out of like the seance house, you know, that Monk discovered. Like, like that seems to be leading towards like what is going to be like the intrigue and the like the thrust of like the antagonists, you know, like what caused this seemingly like straightforward, like grift to turn into like a magic catastrophe. But I'm interested seeing where that goes.
Well, okay, since you brought that up, then, you actually think this will be magic? Or will the magic be, like, a trick? Hmm. Like, are we going to meet somebody that's, like, a counterpart to Houdini that can kind of manipulate the way people see things to do some, you know, like, backhanded magic?
Yeah, like raising cadavers seemingly from the dead?
Exactly.
So it's Tesla, is what you're saying.
Dude, I want Tesla in this book. I love Tesla.
You heard it here first, dude. Crazy theory.
Do you think Annie Oakley has a steampunk pacemaker?
Sure, why not?
I mean, would that be the magic?
I mean, it could be, right? Any technology advanced enough is indistinguishable from magic.
Right. Including the zombies behind them.
Including the zombies. Listen, the zombie thing, like, you can fake that, right? Like, there's poison plants that you could use to make somebody seem like a zombie.
Yeah, and to slow your heart rate and pulse and whatever.
Yeah. And you got, you know, like, the government doing the, what was it? Was that MK Ultra, the experiment for, like, mind control or whatever?
Yep, yep.
Maybe. They don't have to be real zombies, although you know me and zombies.
Yeah.
Pretty tight. I love me some zombies. And plus, like, with the Master reference, I would love it to be some supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be. I think all the, like, weird supernatural type stuff throughout the first two series were kind of explained off in a scientific way. Minus the alien in Annie's ear.
Well, in all of their ears, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it's affected Annie the most, right?
Yeah, true.
But she's got superpowers.
Well, it could have been like an African slug. It didn't have to be an alien.
Wait, they have African slugs that give you superpowers?
Well, an India slug. All right.
Look, this podcast is canceled. We're all going to Africa and putting slugs in our ears.
Sounds good to me.
Right. So let's rate this one up. Do I go first this time? I guess I do. Wait, no, Ronnie goes first. Ronnie.
I went first last time, I'll go first this time. That's fine.
Go for it.
I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 anti-possession Taco Tamos.
Well, see, for our last book, I had purchased a 12-pack of tacos, and I already used 7 of those, which means I only have 5 tacos left. I'm going to eat them all up because they're delicious. So I'm going to give this a 5 out of 5.
Nacho fries.
Ooh, nacho fried taco tamos.
I felt bad for stealing your tamo last time.
Good call. Travis.
I think I'm going to go 5 out of 5 as well. 5 out of 5s across the board, huh?
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, so 5 out of 5. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding tamos.
Ah, that's a good one. A+ to you, sir. Okay,
thanks, buddy. Also, side note, just because I'm hazy, Alice like goes on to like lead the Rough Riders for decades, right?
She does in Rough Riders Nation. Yes, she brings all the teams together.
Yes.
Yeah, so, are you talking about the real Rough Riders?
No, I'm talking about Rough Riders Nation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until she's an old woman. Yes.
So that's pretty cool, putting her in there, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that maybe leads into a quick point that we can make. As Ronnie, I believe that we were talking about something. This is public knowledge, correct?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Where it seems like this is going to be the last book, the last Rough Riders book.
Yeah.
And you and I talked a little bit about this because I thought I heard Adam say that at the end of the last one, right before Ride or Die started. But you've got the rub that maybe it's the last Rough Riders, but only for this team.
Well, Adam did say this was the last one unless a secret mission comes up. And then I said, or maybe a different Rough Riders team with different stories. And then it was just a winky face after that. So.
Nice. We will take Winky Face as the fact that this book will continue forever. All right.
Dude, those would be so good, dude. Like, another Rough Rider series with a later team. Like, those are all cool. So, I'm down for that.
Yeah. And there's got to be one member of the team that Martin loves to hate. Because last series, he hated Edison.
I still hate Edison.
And then now, he loves HP but hates HP. So.
Well, you know, they were crappy people, dude. Both Edison and Lovecraft. So.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I got one thing before we quit talking about Rough Riders, though, because exactly. I want this show to be like a Netflix, Hulu, some kind of thing.
A show like the Aftershock Central podcast?
Like a TV show, yeah.
Yes, awesome. Let's do it. Netflix, call us. All right, continue.
And I already said that Rainn Wilson would be an awesome Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes.
Remember?
Yeah.
Houdini would be an awesome person, too.
For what? For Rainn Wilson?
Yeah, no. Or the guy from what's the show that you love? Mr. Robot for Houdini.
Oh yeah,
that's who I picked.
Oh, that'd be cool.
What's his name? Sammy something?
Yeah, he's. Yeah. His name sounds like Blossom's name.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, what's her name? Something Malik, right? Isn't that?
Yeah.
His name's
yeah.
similar also. Rami yeah. Malik, yeah.
Rami Malik, yeah.
Yeah, Rami Malik. He'd be good. I could see that, dude. I love him. He's going to be Freddie Mercury in the Queen biopic.
Yeah. That'd be pretty cool, too.
Yeah. I saw some set pictures. He looks exactly like Freddie Mercury. It's crazy.
And this TV series will come out before Ninjak Versus comes out.
Never heard of it.
Oh, shit.
You heard it here first.
Wrong podcast.
Oh, sorry.
All right. Do we know what's coming out next week? Because I didn't look.
No.
All right, cool. We don't know what's coming next week, but I'm sure it's going to be awesome. It looks like next week all we have is Monstra Mechanica number
4. Oh, all right.
Pending changes, because we never know.
Yeah, we never know until Wednesday when they come out.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we'll know like Monday when we get the book.
Sometimes.
Or Wednesday when it comes out.
All right, so it'll be at least that, maybe more. We don't know. Let's briefly talk about last week's books, which I don't even have pulled up. All right, so last week we had Alters number 10, which is the final issue, and we had Brilliant Trash number 4. And I just wanted to give everyone a couple of minutes to see if we had anything we wanted to talk about from last week's books. I think, Travis, you maybe had a thought or two about Alters. I had a thought or two about Brilliant Trash.
All right, yeah. You want to start with Alters?
Sure.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously... it kind of ends with the end for now, right? I felt like in ways, it felt a little rushed as far as, you know, even being like a chapter ending, you know, I felt a little bit cheated that like the scene where he's coming out to his parents, like he's just like, hey, so. Just read my diary and like that's the end. I that just seems like a big moment for the character, and they kind of like it feels like they just didn't have time to do it. And like beyond that, kind of, you know, this whole last arc kind of was like instigated by whatever, like, what's the bad guy's name? Like Molecule Man or, like, His old crew, like, had a plan, and they're sort of like, oh, you know, like, we're up in Charisse's business, trying to recruit her for something, and, like, we never got really a sense of what that was ever supposed to be, you know? So it's, like, incidental. It is, so I'm curious, you know, where that was going, So in that sense, I think it didn't feel satisfying as like a chapter ending, at least.
Hmm. Yeah, I had the same thought, actually. The story itself I dug, but then the last few pages, everything resolved very quickly. You know, like, love saved the day, and that's one of the things that I kind of hate, to be honest. So one of my favorite movies of all time is The Matrix. Except the problem with The Matrix is that damn ending where they're saved by love. Because it's kind of like an easy way out, you know what I'm saying? And I think Paul Jenkins has done much better in the past. And I'm wondering too, Travis, if maybe the reason that it ended that way is if there's not something else going on where this book had, you know, another issue or two. But either because of sales or the creative team having other bigger projects to work on, that it was kind of laid to rest. I felt the same way. But I did like the resolution with Chalice when she was going to come out to her family. And then I guess kind of out her brother too as being an alter. So I like that part of it. But yeah, overall there was something a little missing for me in the way that it ended. But I still enjoyed the book. We're not going to rate them up, but I just wanted to. Ronnie, is there anything you wanted to say about alters?
I really enjoyed the series overall.
Yeah.
And I think unless something takes its spot, it's going to be a hole, not easily filled, like in the Aftershock genre that it's in right now.
Yep.
Like the superhero-ish X-Men style.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah, not to mention, like, I mean, I loved it too, you know, like it's one of my favorites that they've ever done. But like, I don't know of any other superhero comics that feature a transgender character, you know, like that to me was so interesting.
Not forcibly.
Right.
Right. Like, cause everything that they talked about seemed so genuine and progressive instead of like even marketing when they marketed it, really, it wasn't. Like, hey, it's the first transgender character and blah, 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 which they could have easily done. But it just basically took its own life and everything was subtle.
Yep. All right. And then finally, Brilliant Trash. I think this is probably the book that we have all been digging the least. And I don't want to put words into your mouths. So if I'm wrong, then by all means, tell me. Definitely for me, it's the one that I've been enjoying the least. But I gotta say, there's been a pretty large progression for me from the first issue until this one. And I think now that the book has gotten some footing, it has gotten quite a bit better. And as a matter of fact, I really enjoy the last issue and this issue quite a bit. Not so much for like what's happening, but like the stuff that is being said about this world. Because it's kind of like, you know, any good sci-fi, you want to like transpose current events and current ways of thinking and kind of extrapolate them into the future in some way. And to me, Brilliant Trash has sort of become like a Black Mirror episode. And I'm starting to really enjoy it. I don't know how many issues this is, but it's starting to come on its own. And I think in particular with this last issue, there was some really interesting stuff done. I can't remember the character's name, but the guy that thinks he's a superhero. And we saw in previous fight scenes with him, like where it switches the art style to this more like cartoony, comic booky style. And then, you know, once that fight is over, like we flip back to reality, I guess, to what the way the rest of the book looks. And we learn that the reason that happens is there's like the mind control children that like use their abilities to like make him see the world in this way so that he doesn't feel like, or maybe he doesn't learn truly he's working for, right? Because the Lifespanner company being run by a huge douche who doesn't care about anybody except, you know, like making money and creating these alters to better his company. And I thought that was interesting the way that that was handled. But you know, just like in like Backaways, for example, I have a hard time connecting emotionally with the characters. And that kind of takes me out of this, but yeah, I'm enjoying Brilliant Trash quite a bit more than I was. Unfortunately, like the way that most people read comics, I feel like by this point, it may be too late for a lot of folks, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Cause I'm in the same way, really. Like, you said it best with Backaways is usually I'm character driven and I found myself checking out early, but the last couple of issues have gotten better for me.
Yep.
Did I actually I was, you know, super into this series, like when it first came out, like I was so intrigued by where they were going with it. You know, like obviously I was, you know, like, I was giving them like a lot of leeway, like because you can't judge it on the first issue. And I'm like, there seems to be some really interesting ideas here. And I don't want to say maybe that I'm reacting negatively to not knowing what was going to happen. But I feel like the last, this issue kind of for me, we're seeing another faction kind of come into play. And narratively, it makes me very confused how all of this fits together. Having all kinds of different factions could be a sign of being unfocused, unless that is the point, really, which is basically unless this technology belongs to the world, it's going to be a constant fight among players to have it and keep it to themselves. I don't know. I guess I'm just kind of from a narrative perspective, I'm very concerned about the focus of the direction of the story. But I do actually think that we've gotten some good character moments to your guys's point in the last two issues. I think his name's Heller, the dude who has all the powers. I like him in this issue. I thought that he was really trying to actually step into the hero role and be you know what, I'm done being flack for lifespan, I don't have to take their orders. And Kennedy, I think, is very interesting, she's definitely the whole time she's been fish out of water, but now she's kind of having this thing where, she's having an identity crisis, her identity is being overtaken by somebody else. And I find that interesting, on a narrative, on a sci-fi level, I think character wise, I like where it's going. Kind of plot wise, I'm getting confused.
Agreed. All right, cool. You guys disagree with us, you can let us know on Twitter. You think we're a bunch of idiots, you can tweet at Who's Paul and let him know all about it. But if you enjoyed this podcast and you enjoyed this episode, then you can find Ronnie at Rumbar316. Travis is at The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And I think that's it. Anything else?
Officially, Blood Blister is being canceled.
Oh, there was a bit of news. I knew it.
That's too bad.
Yep.
I suppose.
Okay, what about Shipwreck 6?
Yeah, that's a great question.
The Wildstorm. That's what about Shipwreck.
God, the Wildstorm's so good.
See, that's what I think, for me, Brilliant Trash seems like, but not executed as well.
Yeah, it's got similar themes, right? The whole espionage, corporate espionage thing. Yeah, I could see that. But Wildstorm is freaking. All right, we're not here to talk about DC Comics. Come on, Ronnie. You have a podcast where you can do that. Absolute DC podcast. Or you can go find the Nerd Legion podcast where Nick and I and Paul talked about the Wildstorm for an hour and a half or two.
Yep. Or you can go to the Nerdy Legion website and click on the Audible link and get 2 free Audible books.
See, Ronnie's so good. Travis, you have failed the city.
That's a DC reference, as well, sir.
Yeah,
the whole Audible thing is still so new. It's disorienting.
Sure, excuses. If you want to support this show, you can go to nerdlegion.com/audible and claim your free book. It's free to keep forever. Forever!
Not just one free book.
That's right. I forgot. It changed. It's now 2 books.
Yes.
You can get 2 free books.
Because we are that good and we care about our listeners.
Yeah, somehow or other we got upgraded to gold. I don't know how that happened. But go check out Audible. Free book. Keep it forever. You sign up. It's a 30-day free trial. If you want to keep it, you can keep it. If you don't, you can cancel it. You get to keep the books forever. How about that? There's no Aftershock books on Audible, but I mean, it's a comic. It's kind of weird to have an audiobook of a comic, right?
Right. But I bet there are Houdini books or books about Roosevelt.
There sure are. I'm sure you can find all sorts of H.P. Lovecraft books on Audible as well. So check that out. Thanks for listening. See you next time.